Welcome to the Mama Needs a Moment podcast. We are your hosts, Chrissy
and Cindy,
co-founders of Her Health Collective.
We are two moms obsessed with changing the way moms take care of themselves. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive in.
We are thrilled to be talking with Ann Garcia today, otherwise known as the College Financial Lady. She is a seasoned certified financial planner, owner of Independent Progressive Advisors, and a dedicated parent to two children who both graduated debt-free from college in 2023. That right there is enough to like, let's have an entire conversation about that, which actually we're going to. Ann Garcia has made it her mission to unravel the complexities of college finances. Ann specializes in helping families balance the desire to support their children's dreams with the reality of funding their own lives. Her book, How to Pay for College, is filled with powerful insights and advice on this topic. And I've just started diving into this book. I highly recommend it to all of our listeners. It is a great read if you are sending children to college at any point in the future. Is something on your horizon, you'll definitely want to check this out. Early in Ann's career as a financial advisor, she heard the same two questions again and again from her clients. One asked, how can we possibly afford to save for college and retirement? And another asked, how can I save for retirement when I'm paying so much on my student loans every month? Through her acclaimed blog, The College Financial Lady, she has helped countless families navigate the intricate financial aid system, empowering them to make informed decisions for their children's future. Recognized as an influential voice in the industry, Ann has been featured in the New York Times, US News and World Report, CNN Money, and countless other media. And we are honored to be able to dive into this topic with Ann today.
I'm the one that gets to ask you the get to know you question. And I get really excited to do this. It's so fun for me. But you don't know what the question is, and I don't know what the question is, but I would like you to pick a number between 1 and 20, and I'll get you the question that corresponds with that.
Okay. Well, first off, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm honored to be here. As far as a number, let's go with my kid's birthday, which is coming up, which is 9.
Perfect. Let's see. Okay, this is fun. What is your useless talent?
My useless talent. When my kids were little, I got sick of the eye rolls and stuff that I would get from them. And so, you know, in the whole, you're so stupid, mom. So I memorized the opening paragraph of Kafka's The Metamorphosis in German, and I would recite it back to them when I got that look.
Wait, what? Can you recite it now?
Als sich Gregor Samsa aus unruhigem Schlaf erwachte, befand er sich.
Okay, so wait, are you pretending like you're swearing at them? Like when you say it back to them, do they know what you're saying? What?
They'd be like, you know, what is that? I lived in Germany for a while I was
okay.
So this wasn't like something I randomly chose, and I read it in college. So yeah, so finally I told them, when you can quote great literature in foreign languages, you can start calling me stupid.
That's awesome. I love it, Ann.
I absolutely love it. That's fantastic. Okay, let's kick this off by diving into the tagline on your website. It says, getting your kid through college without wrecking your retirement. This is also one of the questions you mentioned hearing all the time when you first began your career as a financial advisor, and it makes complete sense. College and retirement, right or wrong, are two incredibly expensive endeavors in our world today. How can parents navigate this? How can we possibly afford to save for both college and retirement?
Yeah, well, I think it's all a matter of balance, you know, that dreaded word for us as parents. And I would say, you know, savings comes in three priorities. Your first priority is your emergency savings. Your next priority is your retirement savings. And then college savings needs to come after that. And so often we're told as parents, don't save for college, save for retirement. There's loans for college, not for retirement. Well, that's why we have $1 trillion+ in outstanding student loan debt. College is too big, too heavy of a lift to not prepare for it financially. So my rule of thumb is this: let's assume you've got your emergency savings and you're saving for retirement. If you're not maxing out retirement, which this year is $23,000 a year into your 401k, if you're not maxing that out, then no more than 10% of what you put towards retirement should go towards college. And if you want to increase your college savings rate, then bump up your retirement savings rate. Now, if you're in those early years where every dollar is allocated already, because, maybe you've got one or two or three people in your house who outgrow everything they own every 3 weeks, and you've got childcare, or maybe somebody's reduced their work hours, or whatever the case may be, the best way to save for college at that point is set up a 529 college savings plan and get the gifting link for it and share it with the people in your lives who are otherwise generous with your kids, people who give them birthday or holiday gifts, grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends, people like that, and say, "Hey, you know what? We're good with toys. What we'd really love is for you to help support their education." And that can be a nice way to just sort of get that savings snowball growing in the early years when it's really tough for you to do on your own. I also think, every year on your child's birthday, it's a great opportunity to, number one, reflect back on what a great year you've had, how much growth and progress you've had, but then also look forward at the person that you're trying to shape and grow and say, what are the things I can do to help build this future person? And maybe you can find another $5 a month in your budget that you could increase their college savings. And just by growing your savings incrementally over time, you'll be amazed at how much additional money is there by the time they get to college. The thing with college is you can go to college at any price. I mean, we hear plenty about the people who spend $85,000-$90,000 a year to go to college. My son has a friend who just graduated with a 4-year degree that she spent $0 getting. And there are loads of pathways for that and everything in between. What you do when you save for college is you create additional choices for your child. What we want as parents is for our kids to have good choices.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a feeling I know what you're going to say, but I would love to ask the question anyway. When is the right time to start planning financially for college? And is it ever too late?
It's never too early, and it's also never too late. So I would say if you are the parent of a 12-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old who's never done anything, don't beat yourself up about it. You can't go back and change the past. If you're the parent of a very young child, the great thing about starting to save early is the earlier you save, the more work your money does. The later you save, the more work you do, right? Because your money has less time to compound and grow. So, as a parent of a young child, as a parent who's expecting children, that's a great time to start building up your savings. But if you're past that and haven't done anything, 529s are still usually your best choice for college savings for a couple of reasons. One is all the growth in the account is tax-free as long as it's used for college. So you end up with a little bit more money, even if you just use, a money market savings account in there. Because at current interest rates, that's earning a decent amount of money, and to not pay taxes on it will put more money in your pocket. The other thing is that most states that have state income taxes offer you some form of tax benefit for contributions to the plan. So it's just a way to get a little bit more money into your savings. I think the important thing for families who have not been saving, who have kids who are, in high school and approaching this point without savings is, look at your budget and be candid with your kid about what you're able to support. There are good pathways through college that aren't, $85,000 a year. It's your job as the parent to make sure that your kid understands what pathways are open to them. And I always think it's helpful to have that conversation from the perspective of goals as opposed to constraints. So not you have to go to community college because we can't afford anything else, but it's really important to us that you get a college degree with a minimum of student loan debt, and we're able to support you to this degree, and we know that there are pathways out there for you that will work in this budget, and we will support you in finding them.
And I'd like to ask you a question about, because you've referred to the 529 plan a couple times, and I've heard conflicting opinions, so I was just hoping that we could receive your opinion on it. When you save in a 529, I've heard that sometimes that can go against your ability to get financial aid. What's your feedback on that?
So there's a small nugget of truth in there that obscures the larger nugget of truth. So there's a formula that the FAFSA uses. The FAFSA is the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. It's the financial aid form that all college students file if they would like to be considered for any form of institutional financial aid or federal student loans or anything like that. Within the formula, well, the formula has four components: the parents' income and assets, and the students' income and assets. Now, the biggest piece of all of that is the parents' income. The parents' assets are assessed at 5.64% of their value, which means that every $1,000 of savings you have costs you $56 in the financial aid formula. So, yes, there's a small amount of that that counts against you. But you're $944 ahead for every $1,000 that you save. Now, there are very few colleges that meet 100% of your financial need. And even less of them meet all of it through grants and scholarships, as opposed to including student loans and work study as part of their financial aid package. So the idea that you would forego savings in the hope that your child will get into one of these colleges that meets 100% of need is, I think, a little bit of shooting yourself in the foot. I've never met a parent of a college-bound high school student who regretted having saved for their student's college.
In your experience, why is it so difficult for families to plan for college?
That's a great question. I think a lot of it just comes back to, who we are as parents. We want everything for our kids. We want the best for our kids. And I often talk to parents, particularly of high school students, where, I say to them, "Have you talked with your student about their college budget?" And they say, "Talking about money with our kids, that just feels dirty. That feels like I'm crushing their dreams." You know what will crush their dreams? $100,000 of student loan debt. It will not crush their dreams to have you guiding them towards pathways that will get them through college with a minimum of, or potentially no student loan debt. What's really tough is when parents let their kids go through the application process without ever factoring money into the equation and saying, "Well, if you get in, we'll figure it out." It's tough to figure that out. And the good news is there are loads of tools for you to figure it out ahead of time. One thing that parents can do is the federal student aid website has a tool called the Student Aid Estimator, and you can go onto that website. It's studentaid.gov, and just look for the Student Aid Estimator, and that'll tell you what the federal formula calculates as your ability to pay for college. If that puts you in the range where you're eligible for financial aid, that's great. Plan as though you're eligible for financial aid. Lots of families are not eligible for financial aid at all, and then they need to look for colleges that offer merit scholarships to their students. The good news is there's scholarships available for every student. The bad news is they're not available at every college. And so, you kind of need to understand which path you're on. Are we on the path towards need-based aid? Are we on the path to merit aid? And then choose your colleges accordingly.
There are so many different scenarios that we could discuss on how to the different needs of different families. And you touched a little bit on this, but I'd like to explore what options are available for families that are perhaps living paycheck to paycheck or are still making payments on student loans themselves and are unable to set aside large amounts of money for retirement or their children's college funds. What can families do in these types of situations?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I worry that we let the Stanfords and Harvards of the world drive too much of the college narrative. They educate a very tiny slice of the population. The vast majority of people are educated through different pathways, and there are loads and loads of good ones out there. And just so I'm not saying, Don't bother going there. Here's how I want to preface this conversation. Tons and tons of research has been done about whether or not it matters where you go to college. And unless you want to be a hedge fund manager, where you probably need to go to an Ivy League to do that, the research shows it really doesn't matter where you go to college as much as it matters how you go to college. And how you go to college is participating in things, making friends, making connections with faculty, applying classroom learning to a job or an internship, and that's all available at loads and loads of different colleges. So there are tons and tons of different pathways through college that don't involve, $85,000 a year. Most states offer a version of free community college, and so most students are eligible for that as a starting point to their pathway. Most states have forms of what's called dual enrollment. And in dual enrollment, you're enrolled simultaneously in either a high school and community college or four-year college and community college, but you're getting your first 2 years of college done through the community college, usually free if you're a high school student, sometimes free if you're a college student. And then those credits will transfer over to your 4-year program. My son's friend who graduated from college for free, she did 2 years of free community college, and then she was working at Starbucks. And Starbucks has a tuition partnership program with Arizona State, where she could attend their online school for free. And she knew that she was interested in a career path that wasn't going to be very lucrative. Her family wasn't able to support her financially through college, and so she chose to get her degree that way. And so she graduated debt-free, $0 at $0 of cost, and now she's working in her chosen field and doing fine because she isn't paying off student loans. So there are loads of pathways through that. Unfortunately, they're generally dictated by states individually, and so it's just a matter of researching the options in your states. The other thing I would say is don't be afraid of looking at 4-year college pathways, because many colleges, it's a small number relative to the overall population, but there are plenty of colleges out there that are very generous with need-based financial aid. And so don't just assume that we haven't saved, we don't have resources, a 4-year college program isn't in our pathway. Every college is required to have a tool on its website called a net price calculator, and that allows you to punch in your family's financial information and see what students like you pay to attend that college right now. And so that's a great tool for, for families of limited means to see what kinds of scholarships is my student likely to get at this school, so that you're not going down pathways that are not going to be supportable for you. Military has great programs where, where you can get a college degree at no charge, combining that with military service. So there are lots and lots of different pathways out there. It's not, we haven't saved for college, so you can't go. It's, we haven't saved for college, there are other pathways that'll help you get through it.
Speaking of the different pathways, sometimes that can be so overwhelming, along with talking about the different way financial means of getting to college. But if you were to offer any type of a research tool or something that might bring a little clarity to the different pathways that are available or a place to start, where would you direct somebody?
Yeah, I think a great starting place is to look at your in-state schools and just see what, number one, what do they offer as automatic merit scholarships for students in your state? We often look at it and say, oh, it's, $32,000 a year. Well, actually, it's probably less than that because most colleges will offer that. Usually, as far as these other types of pathways like dual enrollment, like free community college, your high school's college and career center is going to be really well versed in all of those. And so, they'll know exactly what your state programs look like, how you qualify, and what those different pathways are. So I think getting to know your school's college and career center is a really great resource for families of high school students. And the sooner you do that, the better, because, so often families wait until senior year to deal with college, but there are so many things that, like, even I wish as a parent I had known before we got to the college application process. How do your state colleges treat advanced classes and weighted versus unweighted GPAs in awarding merit scholarships? Because high schools tend to push, AP and IB classes on students, and they are great for a lot of reasons. We encouraged our son to take those classes. They weren't a good fit for him. He didn't do very well in them. His college of choice offered him a very generous scholarship, but they used unweighted GPA instead of weighted GPA. And if we had balanced his course load a little better so that would have done a little better in classes, not only would he have gotten another $12,000 a year from the college that he went to, but we would have spent a whole lot less evenings listening to him crying over his homework and saying, "I'm the dumbest person I know." And
Oh
honestly,
my gosh, you're so speaking my language right now. As you were talking, our oldest, she's eighth grade. We're looking at high schools. And from what I've heard from what you've said, I need to encourage her to make friends with the college career counselor and make cookies and bring in coffee and stuff for this person. You're also speaking my language when you talk about your son saying, crying over homework and pushing your child to do something that is not really fitting for them. That's my child as well. And I think it's hard, so hard for parents to discern what to do in that situation because the world around us does say the better classes, the higher classes you put them in, the better grades they get, they're going to be so much more successful.
Yeah.
And from what you're saying, that's not true.
To our Patreon supporters, thank you. We appreciate you so much. Our goal has always been for moms to know they're not alone in the tough and challenging phases of motherhood. We know Mama Needs a Moment provides this to our listeners.
We are thrilled with the growth of the podcast over the past 2 years. Last year, Spotify shared that Mama Needs a Moment was in the top 30% most followed podcasts, was heard in 9 countries, and had more content than 97% of other creators in the family category.
We have recently launched a Patreon account for Mama Needs a Moment. This is a great way for you to provide additional support to Her Health Collective.
We've set up 3 options for Patreon supporters, each with its very own perks, such as special events, discounts, and bonus content from each and every podcast guest that is available only to our Patreon supporters.
Will you become a Patreon supporter? It would mean the world to us.
Well, I would say it really varies from child to child. I mean, I have twins. My daughter, we jokingly refer to her as a D1 mathlete. We were at an IB high school. She did the full IB program there, did all the IB classes, loved them, loved the intensity, loved the rigor, loved the community within the classroom, the discussions, all of that. And the school that she chose to go to, honestly, having those classes was table stakes to get your application read. So, if that's the pathway you're on, you need to be taking those classes. For my son, it wasn't a good fit. He participated in sports. He had a girlfriend. He had a job. He was, that vanishing, well-rounded child and didn't want to spend 5 hours a night on homework. And those classes were not a good fit for him. He did say, however, when he got to college, he's like, "I must have gone to the hardest high school of anyone because high school was hard for me and college is easy. And my friends all say that college is hard." He failed calculus in high school. He tutored statistics in college. So
Oh.
I'm glad that he found his place, he found his fit, and matured academically as a college student. Of the academic offerings that his college had, but high school was really not the time that he was going to shine academically. And I do think those classes are great preparation. They can also be a great tool to, get a year of college credit before you start college and get yourself on a pathway to a 3-year graduation, but they're not for everyone. I would also say, looking at my kids, they graduated last spring from college. My daughter went to a single digit acceptance rate private college. My son went to a sign up and you can go public college. And they both have the same job now.
Oh my gosh.
So, granted, he was finance, she was computer science. So he's working in finance, she's working in computer science, but they're both in, Fortune 100 companies in their management training programs, same salary, same career path, same type of support. So really, we're a focus group of two, but our focus group of two says it's okay to go to college at the place that's the best fit for you, that maybe isn't your first choice of what you would post on Instagram about where you could went
Right.
to college.
There's two areas that I want to just break apart a little bit more for myself and for our listeners, but we're already on this topic, so I'm going to just lead us this way a little bit more. We talked a little bit about scholarships, AP classes, IB classes. There's so much pressure in all of that for the kids. I mean, I think I've heard statistics about a good majority of our kids are stressed and overwhelmed. A lot of them are having mental health issues. How do you balance letting your child pursue their passions with keeping them on track for college? And then how much weight do we put on our kids for these AP and IB classes for admissions and scholarships and getting into schools and whatnot?
Yeah. Well, so here's the thing. We tend to think that scholarships are the sole province of the extraordinarily elite students or football and basketball players. And the reality is, there are scholarships available for everyone if you're willing to go to the colleges that will offer you scholarships. I mean, my son had like a 3.5 GPA and he got a merit scholarship to his college. He also got a scholarship for playing video games. So, I mean, there's truly every scholarship. Every scholarship is out there. So it's just a matter of, looking at the overall scholarship landscape and looking for colleges where you are in the upper quartile of students who are applying, regardless of who you are. That doesn't mean you have to have a 4.6 GPA. Again, my son with a 3.5 GPA got a merit scholarship to his college of choice. Taking a step back and talking about, high school course choices. If you're on the pathway to apply to highly selective colleges, the Ivy Leagues, the public Ivies, the Ivy Plus schools, you need a full slate of AP or IB classes, as much as your high school offers, in order to be considered for admission there. And frankly, if those classes aren't your cup of tea, those colleges probably aren't your cup of tea either. So if you're struggling in those, that's probably not your academic path. Other students take those classes to get college credits, which is a great plan. The thing that's important if you're doing that is make sure you apply to colleges that give you credit for them. So not all colleges give you credit. Just ask before you apply, am I going to get credit for these? Some will give you full credit, some will give you credit towards your major. Some will only give you general ed credit, and that means that you'll be taking less electives as a college student. Some will give you placement but no credit, and some will give you nothing. So just make sure if that's why you're taking those classes that you're then applying to colleges that offer those. I think if neither of those is your priority, and you're just hearing this is something that we should do, I think it's important to look hard at your student and make choices that are appropriate for them. High schools who are part of the AP or the IB system, they have a goal of enrolling kids in those classes and getting kids to get those diplomas, take those tests, pass them and whatnot. And that may or may not be the right path for your student. My experience was that they were great college prep for both of my kids, but I think my son would have benefited from a little bit more balance in his academic day, where he had a chance to be successful as a student in addition to having rigor as a student. So I would say, if you're not on a path to the Ivy Leagues, if you're not trying to accumulate college credits, look for the topics where your child is passionate enough to put in the work to succeed in those classes, and choose those advanced classes and let them take some other classes where they have an opportunity to succeed, build their skills as a learner, build their love of learning, and have a more balanced academic experience as a high school student. One of the things that I found fascinating with my son is, we forget how we frame college. So much of what we tell our kids is, you need to do this so you can go to college, you need to do this so you can go to a good college and whatnot. And I think it was junior year of high school, we were in Tucson for my mother-in-law's birthday, and we took a wrong turn and turned into the block party of University of Arizona pregame.
Oh
And
my gosh, that's awesome.
And for my son, it was like a light bulb went off for him. He had never associated
Party.
college with fun and friends and activities and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, he became kind of excited about the whole idea of college, where he was just like, yeah, I guess I'm going to go and whatnot. But it was kind of eye-opening to us that we hadn't been communicating the full picture of college. We had just been communicating the whole, you need to go to a good college, you need to go to college, you know, blah, 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 blah. And not, college is a great 4 years. It's a time that we think that you'll enjoy, that you'll learn and grow, that you'll, you know, make new friends, learn new things. You know, all of those other things that we want for our kids as part of that process, I think we need to spend more time on. So it's more bring the carrot as well as the stick.
I really appreciate your very measured approach and the fact that you are really encouraging parents to look at the individual child. I'm a former high school teacher, and I remember having students break down at the front of the class. Like, they would come and they would talk to me because they got a B on a paper or an essay or something. And I mean, I'm talking tears and just the amount of pressure that these students are feeling, it's not healthy. And I love everything you said about, you know, there's different colleges, there's different, and you're going to end up in the same place in most instances. You know, it doesn't matter if you're going to an Ivy League school, you don't have to get straight A's to get into a good college that will give you a degree that will get you to where you want to be. So thank you for that very measured approach. I think that's very helpful for a lot of parents to hear.
Well, I think I benefit from having twins who are very, very different people, and we're very, very different students. And, you know, I'm all these years later, I'm fascinated to see that all the things I said were true.
Oh, Mom was right.
Because
Oh,
I
you didn't say that,
guarantee
did
they would
you?
never make big life choices just based on trying to prove me right.
Yeah. Before we move on and switch gears, I would like to just explore a little bit in more detail financial aid, merit aid, scholarships, and FAFSA. This is all, it just blows my mind. And even when you've been talking about it in such beautiful detail, kind of breaking it apart, I'm still like, oh my gosh, this is just so much. Can you talk a little bit more about it? What do these mean? What is important? What Just guide us a little bit.
Yeah, so let's simplify this a little bit because it is overwhelming when you're just like, wait, there's all these things and all these different ways. There are basically three types of scholarships. There is institutional financial aid. There are institutional merit scholarships, and then there are outside scholarships. So, institutional financial aid, those are scholarships that are designed to close the gap between a family's ability to pay and the cost of attendance at the college. Now, institutional financial aid can come from several sources. Colleges themselves can offer grants. And they can also use federal dollars in a financial aid package. And so federal dollars are things like Pell Grants, student loans, and work study. So to qualify for institutional financial aid, you need to file the FAFSA, which is the federal financial aid form. And then some private colleges require an additional form called the CSS profile. Those will calculate your ability to pay, you know, on standard formulas. And if that number is lower than the cost of attendance, then you can be eligible for financial aid. And then it's up to the college how they create that financial aid package. And really, it's a function of how much of their own dollars are they going to put into a financial aid package. That's where the generosity comes from, because the federal dollars are pretty limited. You know, Pell Grant's about $6,500. It's gone up a little bit. Student loan is $5,500 your first year, and work study is about $3,500. So obviously that is not the cost of college. And then there's an additional chunk that the college can come up with, and that is completely at their discretion. So not all colleges offer need-based scholarships. Not all colleges that do offer need-based scholarships meet the student's full need. The good news is, your application to the college, your FAFSA, and your CSS profile are your application for those scholarships. And the other good news is every college is required to have a tool on its website called a net price calculator. Punch your information into those, and you can see what kind of financial aid package you're likely to get. The second type of scholarships is institutional merit scholarships. Now, these are scholarships that are offered by the college to attract the kind of students that they want to attract. We often think of, football and basketball players, but really it's the mathletes who clean up in the institutional merit scholarships. So if you're debating private soccer coach or math tutor, I would go the math tutor route. Tutor route. And merit scholarships vary widely from school to school. Not all colleges offer them. The Ivy Leagues, the more selective colleges generally don't offer merit scholarships. But the other thing about merit scholarships is, like I said, you don't have to have a 4.6 GPA to get them. You really just want to be, as long as you're in like the top quartile of the school academically, you're probably eligible for merit scholarships if they offer them. There's a great website called College Data. And it's just collegedata.com. And you can look up a college and look at their student body profile, and they'll show GPA levels of, the existing students. So you can see, okay, relative to these students, I'm top quartile, I'm middle 50%, I'm lower 50, lower quartile. That's a good indication of whether you're eligible for merit scholarships. They also say on the website, whether the college offers merit scholarships to students who don't have financial need. But so the vast majority of merit scholarships are just based on GPA and test scores often. So take the standardized tests, even though they're not required. But colleges can offer merit scholarships for whatever they want to. Oftentimes small private colleges love to be able to say they have students from all 50 states. So if you're interested in attending a small private college, you might look for ones that are a couple states over, where maybe you're the only one or one of a small handful of people from your state who are applying there, and they really want to get you. My son had a scholarship for playing video games. His college was starting an esports program, and he was on the team. Yes, truly, he had a scholarship for video games. There are loads and loads of scholarships like that. Think of it as a college admission staff is trying to put together an orchestra, and so they're you may be the only piccolo player, or metaphorical piccolo player. So those are merit scholarships. Just like financial aid, the majority of them you will be considered for simply by submitting your application to the college. But it's always a good idea to look at the college's website and see if there are additional scholarships that you can apply for as well that require a separate application. The third type of scholarships is what's called outside scholarships. And the first two scholarships, the institutional financial aid and institutional merit, those are offered by the colleges themselves. And those are the most generous scholarships that you're going to get. Outside scholarships are offered by anyone other than the college. And those are typically in the, hundreds to single digit thousands numbers. They can come from a variety of sources. Rotary offers scholarships. Your high school will have organizations that give scholarships just to people at your high school. There are big databases like the College Board that have, huge lists of scholarships. I think the best place to look for outside scholarships is close to home. Go to your high school's College and Career Center. They will have scholarships that are only available to students in your community, or even at your school, or even some subset of people in your school. Our high school had a scholarship for students in the theater program. It had a scholarship for students on the tennis team. I mean, there's like, what, eight people on the tennis team? So your odds of getting those scholarships are a lot better. Talk to teachers, talk to the advisors in the programs that you participate in. My daughter found a terrific outside scholarship through her high school computer science teacher. The thing with outside scholarships is those will typically close a small gap in your ability to pay for college. So this is not the difference between an $80,000 a year college and a $20,000 a year budget. This is maybe the difference between taking out a student loan and not taking out a student loan. So those are the three types of scholarships. The FAFSA is only required for institutional financial aid. And the FAFSA is something that you file fall of your senior year, not this year. This year was kind of a mess with the new FAFSA form, but you file it fall of your senior year, and then you will file it every year that your student is in college. And I talked to so many families who are like, we're not eligible for financial aid, we're not going to file the FAFSA. File the FAFSA anyway. You might be eligible for financial aid that you didn't know. Oftentimes, merit scholarships require you to have filed the FAFSA to be considered for them. So there are dollars that could come your way by virtue of filing the FAFSA, whether or not you think you're going to be eligible for financial aid.
So much good information. This is a huge help. I know this is going to, especially, I know Cindy is going to be very excited because this is, she's in the thick of a lot of this right now. So thank you so much, Anne, for diving into this and sharing this with us.
It was so wonderful, Anne. Thank you very much. I have a whole page of notes.
Excellent.
Anne was fantastic.
Oh my gosh, so much information. Mind blown. there was definitely a lot of stuff. I know for me, some of the things that I took away from the conversation that really stuck out. I loved the three places you're supposed to put your money. So I loved that she started with your emergency fund, then your retirement, then college, because I do think it can be over. You always hear you're supposed to put money here or put money here. And I think it can be overwhelming and kind of confusing. I love having an expert kind of map it out for me like that. So I thought that was really powerful. And I also really loved her conversation around the different types of colleges. So she had mentioned, unless you want to be a hedge fund manager, it doesn't really matter what college you go to. And I remember my dad saying this to me when I was in college, actually, that there's all kinds of research that shows that it truly doesn't matter where your degree is from, as much as that you have your degree. And I agree with what Anne added in about how you go to college, because I think more than anything, college is about independence, being on your own, learning how to manage your own finances, building and managing relationships without, parents overseeing everything. So I think that's really the power of college, living on your own for the first time. So the fact that we don't need to go to Harvard or Stanford or, these really expensive Ivy League colleges to still get a good job is really important to know. And also, I just want to add in that college may not be the path for every child, and that's okay. There's a lot of trade schools and there's a lot of, so there's pathways to all different kinds of college, and that's an option, but there's also other opportunities that are just as viable and just as important. And I think that that's important for us as parents to remember because we get kind of bottled up in this idea of college comes after high school. That's what our, my child must do. And it's certainly a great option, but there's other possibilities too. How about
Very
you?
well said. No, you said that was so well said. All of that was fantastic. I do know that I'm going to get her book, and you said you already have her book, and
I
it's
do.
fantastic. So I will be getting that. I do have butterflies in my stomach about the impending arrival of going through all of this process. But just like you said, I really appreciated her voicing that. Basically, giving permission to say there's not just one path. Because, like you said, it's kind of driven into our culture to say, okay, you go to high school, you go to college, then you find your mate, and then you follow this path, but that's not what has to happen. And you can follow your own needs and what's best for you. Money tends to be something that brings me quite a bit of stress because I think to myself, oh my gosh, I'm not saving correctly. I'm not retiring correctly. I'm not college saving correctly, just kind of beating myself up a little bit about all of it. But how she broke it down into the three different areas, how it's the institutional financial aid was one, and there's some things in there. Two was the institutional merit scholarships, and then three was the outside scholarships. I took a lot of notes on that just to help break it down for me in my own mind and clarify things for myself. And then exactly what a FAFSA is, it's in that when you should do it, she said, starting the fall of your senior year and every year in college. Great. Thank you for giving me that guide to do that.
Well, and speaking of guide, so we talked about this off air. So I do feel it's important to mention here that there is the book, which is definitely recommended. She said to start there, especially if you have any younger age children. But then once you're in high school and getting later into high school, she also has an online course that is recommended. That kind of there's seven modules and it helps you walk through the process of college, applying for colleges and stuff. So definitely a resource worth checking out if you are in that stage of parenting.
Yes, and it will all be in our show notes to share with all of you listening. Thanks for joining us. We're so glad to have you here. And don't forget about our bonus episode. It was also a really good one with Anne. That is, if you are a Patreon subscriber, we would love to have you, and you'd have access to this bonus episode as well as many other perks. In the bonus episode, we covered the first steps that she would suggest parents start taking in order to start thinking about college. Like, what would she, and actually she gave three. She gave three pointers of where she would guide parents to start just taking a step forward on saving for college.
We've enjoyed hanging out with you today, friend. We hope you got to finally enjoy a hot cup of coffee as you listened. Make sure you follow us so you're the first to know when we drop a new episode.
If you've enjoyed your time with us, let us know by leaving a review. We always love hearing from you. Until next time, stay true to you.